Hello and welcome to the Building Better Leaders podcast, brought to you by Scaffold Coaching. I'm Rachel Sullivan.
And I'm John Tattersall.
Hello and welcome to episode 5 of the Building Better Leaders podcast. In today's conversation, we explore the topic of workplace coaching. And we're particularly excited as today we welcome our first guest to the podcast, Martha Kember, the Head of Learning and Development at Hull University. She will be joining us in the second half of today's conversation to share her wealth of knowledge and experience on all the things learning and development from an academic and a practical standpoint point of view.
For those of you that have heard the term executive or workplace coaching but have never really considered it, we are going to focus today's 3 leadership essentials on what executive and leadership coaching are and how they might be able to help you. The coaching approach today will likely resonate with most with leaders and HR professionals, and it will take the form of a conversation between us and Martha, where we ask Martha her first-hand experience of using external and internal executive coaches in running a workplace coaching programme for, wait for it, the last 13 years. So this isn't our traditional coaching approach format, but we hope that you're really going to get a lot out of this conversation with an L&D professional. So this conversation was recorded pre-COVID, but the content and the points Martha raises seem more useful and more relatable today more than ever. So I hope you enjoy that conversation.
So in today's Leadership Essentials, we're looking at what you would expect to find in a coach and the sort of questions that they might ask you in terms of the outcomes that you want. So the first leadership essential that we're going to cover today is one that where we would always recognise coaching as a form of learning. When anybody thinks of a coach, many people hold a sporting image in their mind. And whilst there are similarities, I think, in a sports coach, because they normally hold specific, detailed, technical knowledge of the sport they've built up with over many, many years, their purpose is to increase and improve the coachee's performance. And so from this point, coaching can take the traditional approach of do-it instruction. And that often involves repetition towards perfecting a particular type of skill. And if you do it enough times, you increase the performance, you improve the performance. So in a sporting context, the standard feature, I guess, the standout feature of assessing improvement in performance is that you receive instant feedback and you get lots of it. So until recently, say at least 30, 40 years ago, this was the role of the sporting coach. However, there is a further level, and this is where we start to get closer to the role of executive leadership coach or a workplace coach, and it involves how we actually coach. What questions do we ask our coachees?
I think when we think about this and really what is workplace coaching and what is the benefit of it, and the analogy between, you know, workplace coaching and sports coaching, John, is really what you talked about, that aspect of repetition and almost having a skilled leader as a sports coach. That's really what you see in mentoring in the workplace. You know, competence is built in doing your work by repetition, yeah. Getting used to the flow of how your leaders work and adjusting your technique to suit those that you follow. What we're saying with workplace and leadership coaching is we're starting to look at even what's going on psychologically behind the scenes of that.
For sure. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I always think of it really as a subtle move from instruction to being curious. So instruction to curiosity around what is your coachee actually seeing? What do they feel? What are they sensing? How they're thinking, the behaving, the reacting? When you start thinking about that, those sort of things can really lift performance way beyond performance attained simply through do it instruction, do this, do that, and keep repeating it. So I think, you know, it does not really ignore the obvious possibility that all people are different and they learn differently and behave and respond differently. to push or pull sides from threat or threat to rewards.
Yep, definitely. And I think this is what we see in sports coaching going towards. I mean, particularly with like cycling and the Sky team, where even how they sleep is impacting their performance and the pillow they use. What we're seeing now is we're using the same techniques as where sports coaching is going. Yes. In the workplace.
Yeah. So when we think about coaching being a form of learning, learning can happen in many different ways, but I think it's about asking questions. You can have all the psychological tools in the world and they're really helpful for helping people frame the behaviour, but it is about asking these questions, insightful questions. And that really is the point of being able to lift people's performance, that they become aware of where their own improvements can be made. And because they've become aware of it, that is, by definition, the opposite of do-it instruction. And once you're aware of it yourself, you're more likely to be able to implement the changes that you want to see. And that can really only be achieved, I think, through working with a quality coach. This, therefore, moves, and it's a big move, away from command and control. We're not operating in an authoritarian manner, we're operating in a much more collaborative way, and that is proven to be the best way of learning. Importantly, that has to be done in a safe space.
That leads us really nicely on to leadership essential number 2 on the subject of workplace coaching. And this is that, you know, coaching is a safe, confidential space to discuss your goals and anything in your current situation that might be holding you back. So I just want to be really clear on something around workplace coaching, that coaching is not a disciplinary action. And it's not something that people only turn to when there's a performance issue. And I think that's the nuance here, isn't it, John, that sometimes we revert to coaching as a last resort, and actually there's a lot of work to do before it gets to that stage. And coaching is a great tool for personal development, full stop. Many leaders value coaching because it provides them with time out from their hectic day to think about an issue that they're facing. The amount of times I'll sit with a client and they sit down and I have to get them to breathe because they just haven't stopped all day. So for some people, it is just the only time they've stopped and thought about what they're doing, how they're acting, what's going on from them, almost like an opportunity to ground yourself in your leadership style before you move forward in your day. But also for people that are far more senior, it's a really good opportunity to step back and step out of the system in which they operate, to reflect in a different lens on the business plan, the future business strategies, their leadership style, the ins and outs of their team dynamics, and about it being a safe space. You know, anything is open for discussion in a coaching session, that the lines between work, relationships, home, they do all blur.
I think it can help with so many things, really, can't it? You know, some of the topics people typically look to coaching for are stress management, time management, career progression, dealing with change, all sorts of things, building confidence.
But also conflict yeah, with people that you work with.
Difficult conversations, yeah. Deeper meaning. I guess the lists are endless. I mean, I think we'd both agree, wouldn't we, that you can often walk into the room with an idea of what a coachee might want to talk about, and it's completely different.
My favourite thing is the thing that you even ask the coachee to talk about. What you start talking about is never what you finish the conversation talking about. The issue you brought into the room is never the issue.
Yeah, it's because in that time, and the learning has happened. When you talked about that learning and that safe space, that they can explore their own sort of ideas, that is the time when it changes, and then that thing that they want to talk about becomes way more important than what they walked into the room with.
Totally. And when the beauty of a coaching conversation is it provides a safe space. And I think ultimately a safe space is a vulnerable space. And when you can step into vulnerability, your awareness, your self-awareness increases. Your awareness of other people increases. Your awareness of your past, your awareness of your present, your awareness of even where you want your future go to go becomes you become differently aware of it, and that is a learning in itself. You know, and on to the issue and the lines between home and relationships and work, one of the distinctions I do want to make is, you know, coaching is not therapy. But as the late Professor Tony Grant, who I had the absolute privilege of being taught by at the University of Sydney, used to say, therapy looks at the past and coaching is about planning for your future. It is a therapy for your future. And I really love that around, you know, you can talk about anything and you can bring anything into a coaching conversation, but it is to know that distinction between what is therapy and what isn't, and getting that fine line between the two.
So I think it's just fair to say then, Rachel, that, you know, the coaching conversation that we have is one that takes you forward in terms of where you want to be, rather than something that you're reflecting back on. And I think that takes us nicely into leadership essential number 3, which is coaching leaves a legacy that makes people better leaders. And I mean, amazingly, Gallup say that 86% of employees think that their bosses are uninspiring.
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
That is pretty amazing.
Unbelievable.
And so, you know, when we think about executive coaching, one-on-one executive coaching with an external coach, I think a lot of people think it can be expensive. And to give you an idea, you know, a 90-minute face-to-face coaching session can range between anything from £230 to £500 a session.
Even more with, you know, the world famous coaches.
With the world, yeah, with the real brand leaders. But I mean, we have some video coaching packages which you can do for £150 per session. So that they're often a nice taster and let people into it, and they can see for themselves where they can make their improvements. But you know, it's still an investment, and you know, but the value is, if it's done correctly, it'll way outperform whatever sort of training you've had in the past. I think
you can't look at coaching in terms of its hourly expenditure. The value from the conversation comes in between the sessions. It's not just correlated to the time in the session. It's the what's the learning that is taking out of that, and how is it then tested in interactions with teams, with partners, with bosses. And it's the learning and the value that comes between each session that is really difficult to put a price and a value on. And that is why coaching with a very good coach is often deemed quite expensive.
Yeah. The return comes in between those coaching sessions, like you say.
And that's what you don't get in training, because training can look a lot better value because it's just training for that couple of hours or that day. But there's no opportunity to learn between, reflect, grow, deepen your understanding and move forward. It's just a one-off thing.
Rachel, you're right. You are right.
Well, we've got some science to back this up. So the Institute of Coaching cites that over 70% of individuals who receive coaching benefited from improved work performance, relationships and more effective communication skills. And they also reported that a massive 86% of companies feel that they recoup the investment made into coaching plus more on top. Now, look, they're going to say that it's the Institute of Coaching, but this was a scientific study. And, you know, the research is there to back it up. It's certainly music to my ears when I hear these kind of things, but it's also something that we see as coaches in day-to-day reality. Coaching literally, from our point of view, changes the way people learn. And because it changes the way people learn, it changes the way people lead. And that is a very hard thing to put in terms of a monetary value. But it's the kind of thing that I know Martha, in our later conversation, will certainly touch on, in how she's noticed this firsthand, and how, you know, it's hard to have coaching and not to start to use some of the same techniques yourself, in terms of the way you lead your teams and build better businesses and build better leaders in turn.
So I think it's time that we heard from Martha. Building better leader interviews with Scaffold Coaching. Martha, good morning and welcome to our Scaffold podcast. Could you introduce yourself and tell everybody who you are and what you do?
Yeah, of course. I'm Martha Kember. I'm the head of learning and development here at the University of Hull. Been here for about 13 years, and I'm responsible for a team of nine, and we look after everything that you would put into that broad portfolio under the heading of learning, including leadership development, coaching and mentoring.
Rachel and I have been providing external coaching to all sorts of different people who work here at the university. The outstanding thing for me is that these people are so clever and they've got so much to give, and they really embrace the coaching philosophy, if you like. Mm. You've been running the program here, the Leadership at Hull program, for how long now?
13 years.
13 years. Yeah. What is it about that program that's been so successful for people who've come along on that journey?
And the program itself, it's really evolved over that period of time. And you're quite right, John. You know, you and I have known each other for probably coming up for 5 or 6 years now. Our initial thinking with the Developing Leadership program is really, as the name suggests, it's about identifying the talent of the future, whether that's colleagues from professional services, technical support, academic areas, and really giving them the space to understand who they are as individuals. So it's not a traditional programme by any means. It's what we might call a kind of a strengths-based leadership journey. And it's not a taught programme. Although we can drop in models and theories and structures and frames, but based on the requirements of the individual. So it really is that starting point of creating self-awareness around the identity of self. Who am I? Who am I as a manager? Who am I as a leader?
Yeah.
And even colleagues are asking questions about perhaps that's not for me, and actually I'm not ready to move into one of those roles, and that sort of sense of transition. We work with what we would call a strengths-based model. So a model that we moves away from the old SWOT analysis and then focusing on what's wrong or developmental, but actually what's great already and making it even better and helping people to really build on those strengths. And that's where I think for me coaching is so incredibly powerful. And gives individuals the space. So coaching is what we would describe as one of the options that sit around the programme. Colleagues will have had some diagnostic work. We use MBTI, for example. And a 360-degree appraisal. And then with one of our facilitators, really then creating that development plan for the future. And then coaching comes straight after that. And you know yourself, coaching is then really that opportunity to explore in a safe space, in an in-depth way, where do I want to be? What questions have I got about myself? Mm. What am I struggling with? What am I excited about? But in quite a focused and a formal way. The program naturally has evolved over that period of time, but one of the great delights about the program is when we brief for next year, so we start to do our promotions for next year, we always invite people to come along, previous participants, and talk about their experiences. And the one constant through the whole program is how amazing the experience of coaching is for our previous participants. Without exception, every participant takes up the opportunity of coaching. Every participant, bar none, completes the coaching. And I think there's something about the legacy that coaching leaves, and the number of people who will sort of say, oh, I wonder what John would be saying to me at this point, I wonder what Rachel would be posing as a question at this point for me. So there's that real legacy of, I'm wondering what question would be good to ask now. And I think for us that really helps in terms of that really embedding that sense of coaching. We've known each other a long time, and I think for us coaching kind of starts in the centre. So it starts with people who are interested, who are curious about themselves, curious to learn, but then also curious to support other people, and not just experiencing coaching, but almost that developing their own coaching practice as a result. So the ability to ask questions in a different way, the ability to really think strategically about what the other person in the room needs, And so almost that by osmosis, you create this pool of really independent thinkers, of curious managers who want to support and develop and embrace that kind of values-based coaching that I know is so important to you in particular and to Rachel. Because there's a difference, isn't there, between a university having a set of values on a piece of paper as a progressive and empowering and excellent, but what do they really mean? And I think one of the things that coaching can really do is to help people to really deconstruct, to get underneath the skin of what does that actually mean for me, and to become more articulate in the way that they talk about self. You know, we talk about the emotional intelligent manager, but getting someone to sign up for a course that's called the emotional intelligent manager is really hard.
Yeah.
But when you explore that in a coaching in that sort of really safe space, I think it's one of those almost like the light bulb moment. I mean, we experience it often, don't we, in coaching, or perhaps not so often, but we like to think that we do.
It's and nice that, when we do.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that, oh, I've kind of got it. I understand now. Yeah. That's why. That's the impact of me on others. Or actually, that's why I'm holding on to. And, you know, the things that, you know, I remember from my own coaching and my own coaching practice, the post-it note on the steering wheel, you know, that sort of visual post-it note. Why am I allowing myself to get angry or get upset or whatever it might be? And I still remember, you know, my coach on my shoulder, you know, the little angel on one shoulder. And I think there's a real power in that.
It's a really interesting observation, that, because I've not really thought that when you're actually coaching somebody else, and particularly in the context of this program, that they actually would pick up on that and go away, and the people that they work with, and they may be doing an appraisal or just in any general conversation, is that they start using the coaching principles, but they probably have just picked that up from a coaching session.
It's whether you, I don't know, I think as coaches we don't necessarily take in that sort of an actual toolbox, but we have a toolbox with us, don't we?
Yeah.
And I think the things that come from coaching, it's almost like you're helping me to develop my toolkit, my resilience toolkit, my questioning toolkit. And you know, one of the questions that we often get asked is, so what's the question set? Well, there isn't one. You know, the questions that I'm
as in people
ask,
are coming along to the program and think, saying, well, what will the coach be asking me?
Yes, yeah. Well, what's that kind of that very formulaic and if I'm asking coaching questions, what does a good coaching question look like? Yeah. And actually, you and I both know that actually, it's sometimes it just forms in the moment. It's about what's appropriate, what's the right challenge at this particular point. And actually, a question that I might feel comfortable asking, you might feel uncomfortable. The language that we use is just so important.
Yeah.
But it's, and sometimes just the pauses in the conversation as well. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the great power is almost what you leave behind. And actually how people then almost turn that. It's like that mirror, isn't it? When we often talk about coaching mirror, is you ask me the questions that maybe I'm not ready to ask myself. Maybe I don't want to ask myself. A bit like that blind spot, you know. And that mirror from the people that you're working with on our Developing Leadership Programme, that they in turn then have that mirror that they can hold up to others. And I think there's also something about that ability to challenge less passively. Not sure that's quite right, but that ability to challenge authority, power structures, particularly in a very, you know, red brick institution like ours, and to be okay to do that in a way that's safe, that's authentic, and that's kind of real.
What do you think is the biggest single benefit to the university in having an external coach, perhaps, versus having somebody who might be in a coaching pool that belongs to the the university?
I think the biggest single benefit is safety. Probably, I'm not sure if it's the right language. So we often get asked by participants on our programme, what's the difference? What does it really matter? And I don't think it really matters, you know, whether you're an internal coach, whether you're an external. We still all work with the same sort of ethical principles, that we still have the same sort of moral guide. But actually there's still a sense of that confidentiality, that safety. And I think as coaches as well, it's also really important that it removes that challenge of collusion. So as a coach myself, as a practitioner inside my own institution, it becomes harder in a way to move away from, oh yes, I know how you're feeling, gosh, isn't that dreadful? So you get drawn into and you can potentially collude with those clients, whereas the external is less likely. I'm not suggesting that it never happens, but it's less likely to do so. So I think there is something about that sense that we often get asked is, what do I do? What do I take into coaching with me?
Yes.
And with this programme in particular, there's that kind of, it's almost that permission and that legitimacy to say, well, you've got your professional development plan, take that in. But actually what you'll then find is actually something else will fall out from that.
The issue you take in is never the issue that comes out, is it?
And it's never one issue, it's multiple layers. But that's a question that we often get asked. So it's, oh, great, what do I do now and what do I take in? But there is something about that permission as well. And I think, again, in a really large institution, having permission to talk about self, to be okay not to be okay, to be vulnerable, to be authentic, is hard, because we all have a professional persona. Mm. And in particular, we were talking earlier, John, weren't we, about, you know, the academic community, the professional services, technical staff. Is we have that kind of day job, or I'm the academic support tutor, I'm the head of department, and actually that's that persona that we create, whereas behind it, I'm Martha, I'm Rachel, I'm John, and helping to break down some of that, to be as vulnerable, when actually a lot of our participants here might well be moving into really challenging head of department roles, maybe associate deans, deans of faculty, where actually everyone's looking at them to be the best that they can be, to be strong, to be resilient, and all of those things are even more important. And I think, John, back to your question about external versus internal, that sense of safety, security, confidentiality, even though that would be provided internally, that's where the external comes in.
I think having an external coach sometimes can bring an outside perspective. So, you know, we go into other businesses as well. And sometimes just to give it a different nuance is probably helpful to the coachee.
But also I think, you know, we bring something of ourselves to that as well. So the things, Rachel, that you bring in that are useful for your client at that point, John, yourself with your values and your anti-values, is almost, let's just stop and look at that from a slightly different perspective. Or what I'm hearing, what I'm seeing, that the things that we don't see about ourselves. We were talking about a mirror earlier on. But also that testing back, is it necessary to use that language? But also being okay that you will also be tested as coaches. And I think sometimes we forget that actually coaching is really, really difficult. It takes a lot and it's quite draining for the coach themselves. We were talking about that kind of legacy, what we leave, and sometimes we forget that. Sometimes we walk away from a coaching relationship and feel, I'm not sure, have I been, what was useful? And actually, almost that ability, and one of the great things about this programme is we come back to it a year down the line, what was useful for you? Well, actually, let me tell you what, that coaching was amazing. So that the longer term impact of the things that we do as coach practitioners is demonstrable in this program, and for me that's also really important, that legacy
It is amazing that you do that. And one thing that is really nice about academia is most people are still here, so talk us through a little bit more about some of the feedback that you do get a year on, that people say that they've kind of, you know, what have they taken away from the coaching a year on?
I think, it's that continuum, isn't it, Rachel? I mean, it's everything from, that was amazing, and I had this light bulb moment, to actually now I've really sort of thought about it. I've now got this additional toolbox of things that I'm now using. So there's really, really great evidence of, during that sort of coaching in, or in that environment, I was exposed to, I don't know, X model or a theory or a way of working. And I've had a go with that. I mean, we had a really good example last year with one of our participants who's been introduced just to a really simple, the GROW model, but had never seen it, never worked with it or heard of it before. And then talked, we also have action learning sets as part of this programme, and then talked actually in the sets about how he'd applied that model in a range of different circumstances. And almost, you could see it in his face, it was kind of quite enlightening. And I think for us, it's also about not making assumptions, oh, that's just a simple model. If we introduce it and it gets used in a range of circumstances, that's brilliant. Yeah. But it's the way that people apply that. I think we also see evidence, Rachel, not necessarily the anecdotal evidence that we get from individuals. And yes, it was great. And I really felt that person A or person B really listened to me. Mm. And I really valued the space. But it's what happens differently. And last year, every year we have an award ceremony here, celebrating excellence. And we just sort of went around the room and counted the number of people in the room who were finalists who'd also been coached through this program. And the number of people who are promoted through academic promotions, who are participants on this program who've been coached. Last year we had, of five professors who were promoted at the university, three of them had been coached on this programme.
Wow.
And there isn't a direct correlation between,
well,
as a direct result of that, this has happened. Mm-hmm. But there is evidence there to say, having had that opportunity, maybe just something slightly different happened. Maybe I had a bit more confidence to put an application in for academic promotion.
I just love this. I love it when we get the feedback from you, because I think, for me, it just shows, you know, coaching can be really, it can be an investment. It can be quite expensive when you look at it on the face of it, but it isn't just six conversations. It's something that lasts a year. It lasts a year and a half.
It's also those bits in between. It's not just the long term as well, is it? It's almost that, having had that first conversation, that first meeting, what happens in between times? So actually in that 3 or 4 week period between your first meeting and your second meeting, the thinking, the planning, the questioning that starts to happen in that space of time as well. So it's the in-between stuff, not just the meeting itself. So that's where that real
value comes. That's where you do the work on yourself, isn't it? And the coach doesn't do that for you. No. That's the joy of coaching. It's it's for you to do to yourself as well.
Yeah, legacy.
Okay, well, Martha, thank you very much indeed. There's lots and lots of things for people to take away there. Just like to say thank you for your time this morning.
Well, you're really welcome, John. Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening to the Building Better Leaders podcast. We hope you've got a lot out of this. If you'd like to read up a bit more on any of the content that you've heard in today's podcast, be sure to check out our website, scaffoldcoaching.com.